Sunday. C-minus 54. RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. In a labyrinthine studio complex whose corridors she had walked only too many times in the past, Emma fastidiously ran through her key points from the previous night's prep work and made sure that Timo knew how to deal with anything that might come up during his imminent high-pressure appearance on Focus 2020. They had nothing to worry about from longtime ally Billy Kendrick's appearance via satellite, while shock jock Joe Crabb wasn't taken seriously enough by anyone to pose any kind of meaningful threat. Almost everything Emma and Timo discussed related to the complex relationship between GSC Chairman William Godfrey and Prime Minister John Cole, the man who once served as his deputy. Cole himself wouldn't be on the panel, of course, and would instead be represented by the proxy of his senior advisor Jack Neal, who both Emma and Godfrey knew only too well. There was no love lost between any of them, but Emma repeated herself several times in telling Timo that his priority was making sure that Jack didn't manage to link Cole to Timo in an effort to leech some of his public goodwill. Emma knew that Jack would sycophantically fawn over Timo's recently announced ambitions to develop new space-related technologies via his Fiori Frontieri program, and she drove the same point home over and over again until she felt sure that Timo understood that any association with Jack, and by extension Cole, would prove toxic in the long run. Timo admitted to having paid little attention to British politics during Cole's first year as Prime Minister, but even he knew very well that Cole certainly wasn't without his detractors at home, with critics ranging from traditionalists within his own party to all manner of outsiders. One senior party figure, speaking for many, had even publicly commented that Chairman Godfrey's otherwise stellar legacy would be forever stained by his decision to handpick a successor who isn't fit to be the chairman of a county darts league. Indeed, some had gone so far as to posit that Godfrey picked a bad successor on purpose in order to make it easy for him to reclaim the party leadership when his GSC term limit expired. Although Godfrey himself said very little about Cole as an individual, he also made no secret of his intention to return to domestic politics when the time came. And since anyone with a pulse understood perfectly well that a leadership challenge from a returning William Godfrey was not one that John Cole could hope to survive, unless Godfrey's name and image were irredeemably tarnished in the meantime, it had come as little surprise to anyone that Cole had seemingly gone out of his way on several occasions to make Godfrey's life as difficult as he could. The only personal comment Godfrey let slip was his view that John Cole and Jack Neal were a match made in heaven, and even then he left everything else to subtext. What wasn't publicly known was that Godfrey remained personally affronted by Jack's snake-like decision to renege on a handshake agreement that he would never work with Cole after leaving Godfrey's side. Emma knew that Godfrey would be biting his tongue in an effort not to snap at Jack during the panel, and that Jack would likely be doing everything he could to bait him. The instruction to Timo was simple. Stay out of it. In the other direction, Cole still bore an intense grudge over something that had happened in China on the night of DS-1's ill-fated launch. It had been bad enough that Godfrey chose to pose with President Slater and Chinese Premier Ding Xiang with Cole watching from the sidelines, but the second snub cut Cole even deeper. This snub had come when Godfrey sent Cole to conduct an interview with some of the attendant press, only for Jack to later reveal that Godfrey had asked him to make sure the press weren't recording and wouldn't share any of Cole's words. Knowing that Godfrey had considered him a liability was all the motivation John Cole would ever need. What Emma made clear to Timo was that Godfrey's behavior and political tactics, while often distasteful, were consistent with an age-old power-for-its-own-sake philosophy and tended to stay within certain loosely defined bounds of acceptability. Cole, meanwhile, thrived on chaos. Emma used the metaphor of Godfrey being a particularly venomous snake and Cole being a particularly virulent pathogen. Both were dangerous, but the latter's behavior was altogether less predictable. With Jack Neal present in New York as nothing more than a mouthpiece for Cole, a wariness of their bull-in-a-china-shop approach was crucial to Timo's hopes of surviving the night untainted and unscathed. Timo, for his part, had impressed Emma throughout the day by remaining focused on the advice she gave him and making no mention of the blockbuster secret Dan had shared with him regarding Richard Walker's hoax. Like a character actor getting deep into a role, Timo seemed to recognize that consistently acting like nothing had changed was the only way he could make it through the panel without saying the wrong thing by mistake. As Emma was about to skirt that rule by, quickly checking that Timo still felt okay about staying quiet, the voice of a young studio intern called through the door after three quick knocks. Miss Ford?
1 second, Emma said to Timo. She opened the door.
Yeah? The intern gulped and blinked several times. He didn't look overly intimidated by Emma's presence. She knew that look well, and this wasn't it. But he was clearly uncomfortable with whatever he was about to say.
Spit it out, she said.
The intern nodded quickly as if trying to shake away his hesitation. He then spoke just as quickly.
Chairman Godfrey asked me to give you a message. He told me to say that you're on the wrong side, but that he won't hold it against you as long as you play by the rules.
Emma turned to Timo.
I'll be back in a minute.
The same young intern again knocked on the door of an occupied room within RMXT's Manhattan studio complex. This time, however, the panelist on the other side was William Godfrey.
I have a message for Chairman Godfrey, the intern said when someone else opened the door.
Godfrey's voice replied, increasing in volume as he moved towards the door.
What did she say?
The intern glanced uneasily at something out of Godfrey's view, prompting the GSC Supremo to step out of the room to see what he was looking at. Immediately, Godfrey recoiled very slightly in instinctive surprise at the unexpected sight of Emma Ford. Though his eyes were still and focused on hers, his facial muscles moved in the subtle way a trained observer like Emma recognized as telltale signs of being unpleasantly surprised.
Well, if it isn't Emma Ford, Godfrey eventually began, what brings you?
While shaking her head, Emma raised a single finger in the air between them. She counted the longest 5 count of her life, ignoring the triple quick heartbeats thumping in her chest, and then lowered the finger. Godfrey stayed quiet, somewhere between amused and confused. Emma inhaled deeply and shook away her lingering doubts.
The next time you feel like threatening me, she said very firmly, at least have the balls to say it to my face.
At that, she walked away.
Wait, Godfrey called after her. She ignored it. Emma, please.
This gave her pause. A please from William Godfrey was rare indeed.
What? She asked, stopping in her tracks but not yet turning around.
There's something I want you to see. I promise it'll take no more than a minute.
When Emma finally turned to face him, Godfrey curtly dismissed the lingering intern with a decisive hand gesture before beckoning Emma towards his room. Curiosity carried her to the door.
This better be quick.
Oh, it will be,
Godfrey said. He then opened the door, revealing several stunned faces all staring at Emma. She looked around the room, taking in the countless tablets, laptops, and printed charts on every surface and in almost every hand. She heard the last voices dying down towards the back of the room as the hush filtered its way across. Her eyes continued to dart around, looking for something meaningful in this beehive-like room full of aides.
12 Emma Fords, Godfrey said, each as disposable as the last, each as self-important as the next.
Some of his aides looked to the floor. Some looked at each other, and some pretended to keep working on whatever they'd been looking at before Emma arrived. None were as uncomfortable or embarrassed as Emma.
You think you're so special, Godfrey said, addressing Emma directly but still speaking loudly through the wide-open door.
He waited for her to look at him. When she eventually and reluctantly did, he shook his head.
Dan is special.
He continued, his words now positively dripping with derision.
You were just the first shark who smelled his blood.
Emma felt her face reddening. There was anger, there was embarrassment, and there was a swirling combination of the two, far more potent than the sum of its parts.
Godfrey's eyebrows seemed to rise halfway up his forehead as he tilted his head back and dismissively flicked his hand outwards, as he'd done to the nameless intern moments earlier.
"You can go now," he said.
Rendered speechless, Emma put all of her effort in trying to make sure that her expression didn't reflect her feelings.
"Oh, and here's a little piece of advice for the road," Godfrey added, leaning in close. "Don't start fights you can't win."
Godfrey then closed the door, leaving Emma stunned and alone in the corridor, wondering what had just happened. She closed her eyes for a few seconds, which proved long enough for the embarrassment to fade and anger to take over completely. At first, there was an element of anger at herself for playing into his hands by walking back when he called her, but this was nothing compared to her all-consuming rage directed squarely at Godfrey himself. When she arrived back at Timo's dressing room, he asked the obvious question.
What did he want?
Change of plan, Emma said. Godfrey wants a war, and that's exactly what he's going to get.